It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 112. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, Steelers Nation. Dave, I'm betting you're on eclipse watch right now. I bet you have your glasses ready and a good spot picked out in your backyard to watch this thing.
Yeah, I probably would if we would actually see it here. Funny story here. My wife's cousin, who's almost like a little sister to her, lives in Portland, Oregon, and has two little kids. And I was reading some stuff on the internet on new what is it? New Scientist. You know, places where old people read. When they get on. Anyway, they had some tips and tricks and cool ideas for kids on viewing the eclipse and all like that. So I got the PDF all downloaded and got her email address and sent it to her and went through all that rigmarole. And my wife says, you know, they're probably not going to be able to see it out in Portland, right? So I said, nah, maybe I should have done more homework on that. So yeah, I don't think you have to worry about me standing out back with any glasses on trying to view it, because I don't think we can even view it good out west here. And I think some of the weather out east is going to make it tough on people, like even you folks up there in Pittsburgh as well, right?
Your eyes are safe and mine probably are as well. I think East Coast is more, you know, Midwest, East Coast, kind of in the eclipse zone. But yeah, super cloudy today, so does not look like we'll have an opportunity to see much of it. But I've not spent much time. I've been focused on the NFL draft and trying to figure out who Pittsburgh will draft as opposed to the eclipse. But maybe the clouds will open up and we'll see what happens.
All right, when's the next time this thing comes around?
You know, they say it's the only time we'll see it in the next 100 years, and if it was like a year later, they're saying, oh, it's another eclipse coming. So I don't know. Okay. Maybe this is more of an eclipse than past ones, but I think we'll be okay.
All right. Well, I guess I'm going to have to leave this life without seeing it then. But I will see the draft coming up. At least I hope I will here. So we've got a little bit to talk about. Not a lot has happened since, obviously, our Friday show took place there. But I think we got a few items to discuss today.
Yeah, you know it's slow when I lead into the show with eclipse discussions, but yeah, we won't see the eclipse, but we will see Max Mellon coming to Pittsburgh. Apparently, he's in for a pre-draft visit on Monday. He had an Instagram story showing him in Pittsburgh on Sunday night. The question is, who may be joining him? I think this is generally the last week you'll get pre-draft visitors to come in. It's usually the first 2 weeks of April to finish things out, and then after that, it kind of, you know, quiets down. So, you know, Mellon is definitely coming in, one of the top slot corner options. He's played outside and inside at Rutgers. Decently built, you know, relative for a slot corner, around 5'11", a buck 90, with 32 plus inch arms. He's physical, tackler, you know, ran really well, had a great combine workout, ran what, 4.39, great ball skills, special teamer, 4 block punts at Rutgers. So there's a well-rounded skill set. Yeah, I think in terms of some of the change of direction is probably a bit of an issue, maybe a bit more stiff than the testing would indicate. And maybe just trying to, you know, play to his size a bit more and try to compete against some of these bigger receivers. And thought even defending just some of the middle of the field type routes was an issue on tape. But overall, you know, there's a skill set that'd be attractive to Pittsburgh from the ball skills, the athleticism, experience, special teams value. Frankly, you know, I'm not surprised at all that Melton's coming in.
Yeah, I'm not surprised either. That's a name that we talked about way back, even right around combine time there, about, you know, when going down the list of corners that this team might be show interest in throughout the pre-draft period. And when you look at, you know, kind of, I guess, what specific slot capable type guys. It feels like Max Melton, who now they're having in for a visit, Andrew Phillips out of Kentucky, another one that we've talked about quite a bit through this process. And then, you know, another one, Mike Sanders, still out of Michigan, a little bit undersized at 5'9" and 3/8" there, but obviously comes out of a big program at Michigan. Mike Tomlin, Omar Khan at that pro day and all. Is there anybody else that we should add kind of in? You know, I know Nate Wiggins is in and all like that, but he hasn't played any inside. I mean, there's obviously a few corners, you know, Terrion Arnold out of Alabama, several other, you know, MJ, what, Devonshire. How much did Devonshire play in the slot?
That's a good question. Let me double check that. I think he played a lot of outside at Pitt, but the size profile, I think, is going to project him inside. And even Pittsburgh brought in Daquan Hardy from Penn State, a local visit, but he also played some outside of Penn State, but at his size, he's definitely going to be a nickel at the NFL level.
Is there anybody else on this list, or at least on the combine list, that jumped out as a potential slot guy?
Let me pull up. I wrote an article a couple weeks ago about, you know, potential slot candidates, because it's a position group I've really kind of honed in on, because it's been under discussed compared to center and offensive tackle, wide receiver, even some outside corner discussions, despite Pittsburgh having nothing there at slot corner. Maybe their plan B and fallback option is to go re-sign at Patrick Peterson. But I think Pittsburgh, there's enough talent in the draft that Pittsburgh should have every opportunity to come away with a slot corner. But on that list, I'd written a couple of names, including, this is before the visits was announced, Phillips, Hardy, and both those guys have come in. Let me just try to find it here to actually pull this one up. I'm having trouble actually finding the article that I wrote maybe a month ago. So if you vamp for a second here as I try to figure out.
Yeah, Hardy is another one, a little bit undersized than or, you know, shorter than 5'10", 5'9" and 3/8", 179 pounds, at least at the combine, 30-inch arms. He ran pretty good. I think his official 40 time was 4.38 seconds at the combine. Had a hell of a damn vertical jump at 42.5 inches, and a very, very respectable broad jump at 10'6" as well too. So he's definitely one that should be on that list.
Yeah. So I wrote back on March 5th, 5 slot corner prospects the Steelers should consider. And it was Mike Sanders, still Max Melton, Daquan Hardy, Andrew Phillips. And then the fifth one being Jalen Simpson from Auburn, who's played some safety slot corner. And by this point, Sanders, still the interest there. Melton's in for a visit. Hardy in for a visit. Again, he's a Penn Hills guy. It's a local one. And then Phillips came in for a visit as well. So kind of checking all the names that I've looked at. I think Pittsburgh showed their interest in most of that list.
And didn't Max Melton say at the combine that he didn't have a official formal visit with the Steelers there, but he met with them a couple of times, I think, at the Senior Bowl there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fast forward. I went back this morning to try to look. We didn't even spot anybody at the Rutgers Pro Day, did we?
No, I looked last night to try to double back to see if I could find somebody.
I looked this morning and I couldn't see anybody.
I mean, I imagine somebody was there. So honestly, I just couldn't find a lot of reporting on the Rutgers Pro Day, so I didn't see a lot of opportunity to see who all was or was not there. You're right. Yeah, Melton, don't believe there was a formal with him, but Pittsburgh's approach, I think, for the combine is, if you were at the Senior Bowl and we met with you there and you met almost everybody at the Senior Bowl, then we're not going to hold a formal with you. We're going to use those for the guys, underclassmen, non-Senior Bowl guys, non-prospects that we just had a conversation with in Mobile just, you know, 2 weeks ago. So I think that's been their approach overall. But clearly a lot of interest in Max Melton, who should be a day two guy. You know, I think Daniel Jeremiah had him as his 50th best prospect in his last rankings. I thought maybe he could be a third round, you know, pick 84 type of guy. Still a chance of that, but it's kind of almost an in-betweener. Is he too high to take at 51? Is he going to be there at 84? I'm not quite sure. Ideally, though, get him at 84 would be at the perfect spot for him.
Yeah, I agree there. I know I looked this morning. I know Rutgers has about 28 pictures in their pro day gallery on the school site, but there wasn't anything there. I know they've got a pro day video on Instagram. I looked at that. There was nothing there from any Steeler personnel. You would think that they did have, you would think that at least somebody was there, though.
I would imagine probably area scout. I'm gonna compile. I think for Tuesday I'll have my annual kind of pro day review tracking every person that we saw at every location, and that'll kind of help me juggle the new area scouts and where they're, what regions they're tracking. So went back through some names last night. Nothing earth shattering. Found a couple of area scouts at Liberty, at South Florida, but nothing that's gonna really change the draft outlook too much.
True or false, the Steelers will draft one of Daquan Hardy, Max Melton, Mike Sanders still, or Andrew Phillips?
I've kind of debated this because I really think Pittsburgh's fallback plan is to go get a Patrick Peterson the day after the draft if they can't get a slot corner, if they, you know, choose to address a different position. And there are still so many outstanding needs, but just based on all the guys they've looked at, I'm going to say true. They're going to take one of these guys somewhere, you know, third round.
I will go true with you as well, too. There's just too many things pointing in that direction. And it is, you really don't want to see them have to fall back to that fallback plan if they can avoid it. So it does feel like, now look, this team could certainly double dip in the draft at corner too, right?
Yeah, I think outside, inside are certainly possible based on team needs and outlook. And heck, I mean, listen, they could draft Max Melton in the third round and re-sign Patrick Peterson on Monday and have a veteran mentor. And Peterson could maybe have a bit more of a potential pass down role, and Melton work as that Chandon Sullivan initially and kind of see how things go from there. Nothing says you can't do that. But I do think if they do happen to strike out on slot corner and they have really nothing on the roster exiting the draft, they will immediately turn towards Sullivan, Peterson, one or both.
Now, trying to get two corners within the first, let's say, four rounds of this thing is a little messy, right? You would think they'd go outside or inside and save the other one for later in the draft. And obviously, the later in the draft that you get when it comes to slot prospects probably isn't going to be as good of a dart throw there. However, I'm leading you down a...
Your segues are on point today.
I rested over the weekend pretty good. I'm leading you down a Ferris State Street.
And that is to one Sean Stevens. And that's somebody that we've talked about. And Stevens had mentioned, I believe, a week or so in a podcast he did that he believed he was going to have a visit with Pittsburgh. And according to Ryan Fowler, that visit is going to happen. Not quite sure the timetable. It could be today. Wouldn't be surprised if Melton and Stevens both came in on the same day, meeting with the same, you know, positional coach. Now, Stevens, Ferris State, so small school, D2. Interestingly, this is how you know bios sometimes lie and schools like to exaggerate. And this is probably an extreme. On the Ferris State website, Stevens is listed at 6 foot even on his pro day measuring his weigh in. And that came at Michigan State's pro day, which Pittsburgh was there for. Stevens weighed in at 5'8.5". So we went from 6 foot to 5'8.5". So again, he's going to be probably more of a slot, you know, nickel corner. But that could be your day three kind of guy, maybe even undrafted free agent. That's a possibility as well.
Right. Who of the, if they did go a guy that they intended to maybe play outside, but had to wait until day three to get, who would be on your list there?
Let me pull up a list of names. I mean, again, their interest has kind of been on the earlier round corner, so I don't know how many, you know, we could really point towards. You know, Ike Taylor was at the Michigan, Miami, and LSU pro days, but I don't think any of those guys really have day three outside corner. There's to Corey Couch from the U, but I think he's also going to be more of a nickel. In terms of the outside guys late, I mean, I think Cam Hart and Kyrie Jackson will be day two kind of guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there probably isn't, you know, I put DeAndre Prince in my latest mock draft, but there's no connection between what Pittsburgh has shown. You know, it's probably going to be just somebody that we haven't talked about too much.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Okay. What else about the corner position?
Well, I think just overall from the Steelers pre-draft visit standpoint, we're up to 19 names. And so we're getting closer to completing that list again, excluding the local visits of Devonshire and Hardy, et cetera, some of the pit guys. Let's go through just kind of a positional review. I know that it's not complete. And so we can't, you know, fully make conclusions from this, but there's always been an obvious but general correlation between the number of position groups that come in for a visit and then what the team is looking towards drafting. So if they bring in a bunch of linebackers, odds are they're going to draft a linebacker pretty early. And so of the 19 names we know so far, again, excluding local visits, there's been, five wide receivers. There's been four offensive linemen, excluding Goncalves from Pitt. There's been four defensive linemen, and there's been four corners, excluding Devonshire. So you're kind of seeing a pretty heavy concentration at wide receiver, offensive line, D-line, and corner.
And it should be. That's what the visitor list, mm-hmm. position-wise, feels like it should be this year. You would like to – you're wondering if maybe another center or two might be in this week.
Yeah, it is surprising. There's not been – well, we knew that there was a report about Zach Frazier, who would be a local visit because he's from West Virginia. That's one of the designated local schools that the Steelers have. But we don't know of any Barton or Van Pran Granger or Powers Johnson or anybody like that. So really curious to see. I mean, the lineman they brought in is Travis Glover, who's a guard tackle, Fuaga, who's a guard tackle, Mims, who's a right tackle, and Steven Jones, who I profiled, actually pretty decent tape overall for undrafted, you know, late day three kind of guy. He's going to be a guard at the NFL level. So yeah, it has been interesting to not see any centers, especially knowing that Pittsburgh did not send Tomlin Kahn to the Duke Pro Day for Barton, did not send Tomlin Kahn to the Oregon Pro Day for Powers Johnson. You would think if there was going to be an exception to the Tomlin Kahn Pro Day rule, one of those guys would have to come in for a visit so that Tomlin and Kahn are having a real long sit down with them before making them their first round pick.
Well, we've obviously got the rest of this week to see who, you know, Melton Scott. I'm almost positive. That's a dangerous statement, though, but that somebody will be joining Melton, probably mm-hmm. at least two other people as pre-draft visits on this Monday. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday? How many likely to get in? The hope is that what happens if we get to like 28 confirmed pre-draft visitors and we're left hanging in the wind wondering? I mean, there's nothing says that teams have to bring in 30 total guys, but you would think they would at, you know, barring schedules not working out for some players or whatever, you would think that they would utilize all 30.
Yeah, I imagine most teams, maybe there's a scheduling issue that leaves you 29 at the last second, but I'm betting most teams are at 30.
Now, sometimes we've seen in the past, they'll leave maybe one or two open for a guy, maybe with some red flags or questionable or something like that, that they want to get in to learn a little bit more about and all like that. But the hope is that we build this thing out to 28, 29. I'd like to see a couple more. I'd like a confirmation of Powers Johnson per se being in or Barton being brought in. That would make things look a little bit less messy, if you will.
And I don't know why you wouldn't do that. Obviously, they're on Pittsburgh's radar when Pat Meyer's at those pro days and you want to get to know them. Pittsburgh is in the market for a center as heavily as any position. So, I mean, I would expect, you know, I'd be surprised if we didn't hear anything on at least one of those guys coming in for a visit just because it makes so much sense.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, we have, I think, one has the Penix. The Penix was reported of him coming, supposedly having a schedule coming or mm-hmm. scheduled visit, but I don't think it's actually been confirmed yet that he's in, right?
No, we don't know the date on that. He had just relayed that to reporters after his pro day, and he had a bunch of interviews or a bunch of visits lined up and mentioned Pittsburgh among that list. So we do not know. All I knew is going to be in April sometime. I don't know the date. Obviously, again, I think pro day visits typically wrap up by the end of this week. So if it does happen, I would assume it'll be by Thursday, Friday.
When is the Amarius Mims private or post pro day team workout. That's this week, isn't it?
It's Wednesday. Yeah. Okay. So there are actually, while pro days are done for the teams, there are a lot of individual workouts for injured players. Today, there's Cooper DeJean from Iowa and Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa. And Boyd came in for a visit. We'll see if they send anybody to that workout. Generally, you don't get as much reporting and kind of eyes on these workouts, if anything. So we may not really know. And DeJean's a guy that's a potential first round pick. Broke his leg. He's versatile, can play outside, inside, punt returner. So there should be some pretty good league-wide interest there. Mims and Brock Bowers will work out on the 10th, and then Johnny Newton, a defensive lineman from Illinois, flying under the radar, likely first-round pick, he'll work out on April 16th. And so those are some of the notable individual workouts upcoming.
And then there's a whole – when do the combine medical rechecks
take those place? Just took place this weekend. I saw – Greg Gabriel tweeted out, let me get the exact date, but he actually, I think, just mentioned.
Was Frazier part of that? I didn't see.
They don't announce a list. I imagine he would be given the leg injury there, but they don't actually announce an official public list for combine medical rechecks. If I can try to find where he tweeted this out, he's been tweeting a lot. Gabriel has, he says,
rechecks. That guy has some Twitter battles, doesn't he?
Yeah. not exactly everyone's favorite cup of tea, but on April 6th. And so that would have been that Saturday. Whatever day that was, over the weekend, yeah, basically.
Saturday.
Yeah. So that was the medical rechecks. Again, we don't know who's part of that list. It typically is for players who are recovering from injuries as opposed to medical red flags from, you know, injury history and guys that are generally healthy right now. So, yeah, guys like Frazier, I imagine, probably came in for to get checked out again.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that the position groups, when you look at it in totality as far as pre-draft visits go, I mean, they line up, you know, exactly what you think this team will needs to focus on position wise in the draft. In addition to, you'd like to see a couple more centers brought in.
Who was the last D2 player Pittsburgh drafted? They did go with Ferris State and Sean Stevens. And again, he may be undrafted. I mean, that would not be a shock. Also, we got to mention, because it'll be talked about so much with Stevens, he is the cousin of Joey Porter Jr. Mm-hmm. And so there's the bloodlines aspect. He had a really good workout at Michigan State in terms of his testing overall. I think even reporting was Pittsburgh was requesting Stevens to go to that workout and to for Michigan State to allow him to work out there to get eyes on him. But obviously, Pittsburgh D2 stuff does not happen. It's rare, clearly. I top of my head, I can't tell you the last D2. There's been FCS guys, but D2 is rare.
Yeah, because you had the Hargrave a few years ago, right?
Right, and he is FCS. That is Division I AA, the old phrasing there.
What about Sutton Smith? What's that?
That's FBS. That's okay. Northern Illinois, yeah.
The
Citadel, FCS from Cortez Allen. I'm assuming it was even back in 2011. Yeah, I mean, you just obviously Pittsburgh is always kind of focused on Power Five, generally speaking, especially early in drafts. But D2, that's a fun Easter egg to try to go find. Ricardo Coakley, I mean, he was, I think, D3 was Tusculum, D2, D3. It was not, it's one of those levels.
I don't remember back that. I mean, I obviously remember the pick. I don't remember the ranking of the school, though.
Yeah. Was there somebody ahead of that, though?
Don't talk about very often.
Was he really the last one? I'm trying to think of anybody else that was in that bucket. Hofstra and Cologne.
What is Hofstra?
I think they were FCS. I don't think they were D2 before the program folded. Anyway.
All right.
It would be an upset, but it's a new regime, and you never know what could happen.
Absolutely. Okay. Speaking of one of the, what I wanted to talk about, and I mentioned this to you in our 45-minute pre-podcast production meeting, Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky. This team obviously seems to have shown quite a bit of interest in him during the process. We kind of wondered if that might be the case right out of the chute. Obviously, a lot of buzz about him heading into the whole pre-draft process because of the comps to Debo Samuel, the build, and all like that. I've actually got a chance to go a little bit deeper on him. I think we've obviously had a pre-draft, a draft profile up on him on the site for quite a while now. Finally dug a little bit deeper into his tape. He is going to be kind of, well, not that he isn't up until this point, but, you know, kind of a polarizing guy. And I think that mainly is because of the fact that, A, you know, the route tree isn't all that diverse overall. I think when you actually look at the tape and you start comparing it to some of the analytics, man, his average yard per completion was something like 3-point-something yards, I think. And I think even if you look at his entire college career, under five for sure. I think I remember looking at there for the past 3 years with him. Not a huge contested catch guy down the field. When he does have balls, let's say more than 15 yard air yards past the line of scrimmage, I'm trying to remember how many I counted of actual catches more than 15 yards down the field. 20, I want to say 20 something. I don't quote me on that being correct, but there wasn't a lot of them. Seemed to be, tend to be more of a body catcher at times. But look, his calling card without a doubt is what he does after the catch. Mm-hmm. with him. And, you know, that's been the draw. And, you know, I saw somebody kind of comp him to kind of a bigger version of Rashid Rice, and people kind of not knowing what to do with him last year, kind of having some of the same metrics, if you will, about not, you know, not a great average yard or air yard completion distance, but really, really good after the catch. Is there enough there? You know, where do you come down on him? Because, I mean, he is absolutely fantastic after the catch. And it's not just one or two catches either. I mean, there's a lot of instances on him gaining 8, 9, 10, 12, 15 yards after the catch. But as far as his catches go, there were a lot of screens, a lot of short passes, a lot of underneath crossing stuff in his tape.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a projection, not just from a bit of the competition level, but as you mentioned, kind of the route tree level. Ideally for me, Dave, I would like to replace Deontay the way that Pittsburgh went about trying to replace Antonio Brown with Deontay Johnson. They get a similar skill set and body type of really kind of precise route runner and a guy that can really work his way open to complement George Pickens. You know, can Corley be that guy? Maybe, but I don't know if the tape is necessarily screaming that off the top. And so that might be a bit of pause and hesitation for me. But certainly, I think in the system, talk about off of play action, these glance routes that Arthur Smith is going to run, you know, maybe a bit more of the screen game, maybe a bit more in the RPO game as well. That would obviously, I think, play well with Corley's skill set.
Is he a guy that you'd like to see this? I mean, to me, where I come down with him is I like him. I don't know if I like him to be my only or my first receiver drafted by the Steelers.
Yeah, and he'll require a pretty high pick. I'm not entirely sure where he's going to go. I've even heard some speculate late round one, but I think he probably settles into that more day two, maybe top 50 type of picks. But in a deep receiver class, somebody will fall. You know, could he get to the third round? I think it's kind of hard to project some of these receivers because they're so clumped together and there are so many of them that they're not all going to go where we project them to go.
And look, I'm not breaking any news here. I don't think if you're going to draft a guy like Corley, you've got to have a defined idea exactly how you want to use him because of the, you know, because of what he has on tape and not knowing if he'll be more of that down the field route runner or even a guy that could become a huge separator more than a few yards down the field.
Yeah, so we'll see. Obviously came in for a visit. You can see the allure in Pittsburgh, heavy presence at that pro day, in part because of COVID. Corley was not really available for the combine, and so there was no opportunity to really for him to even measure in and weigh in, let alone work out. And I'm assuming he did not meet with teams, maybe virtually, but probably minimal communication contact overall. So heavy presence there at that pro day. And we do know, you know, again, typically, for what it's worth, historically, when you talk about the Blues Clues, Tomlin can tell you who will be the first round pick. Positional coaches will tell you who's the guys in round two and round three. And to see Azani at that pro day for Corley is worth noting.
Significant, right?
Yeah. Let's see. What else do we have here? Let's talk some trade possibilities. And I know we always get these questions and we're always the first to say, you know, potentially, but you can never really say for sure, trade up, trade down in any given situation around, because you just don't know who's on the board, what your offers are. The draft is so fluid and ever changing. But I think there's two schools of thought here, things you can talk about in a more broad sense, but things that make sense. I think Bill Barnwell has an article this morning about advocating for Pittsburgh to trade down from number 20. I know we touched on this, I think, Friday some as well, Dave, basically saying that Pittsburgh has a bunch of needs, don't have all the capital to fill them right now, move down, get another draft pick to help fill the numerous voids that are currently on this roster.
Look, every year, I think at some point during this process, we have said on this podcast, you know, it wouldn't be the worst thing to see this team move down a couple of spots, pick up a couple, you know, because they always seem to have a lot of, you know, not enough picks to fill the hole sometimes. It feels like on this end. So, yeah, I mean, and acquiring more picks, especially if you can get them in the first, I don't know, 100 to 115 on the board, gives you more shots at this thing. So, I mean, I can't sit here and give good reasons, especially when sitting at 20th overall, of how many think this board will break ahead of the 20th overall. It feels like you could move down three spots or so and get one of three guys that you really have grouped together that fits want and need at the same time. So, you know, this is not a new conversation, though. We always go through this phase of the pre-draft process at some point. Now, I will say this, and I had pulled this up, and do you remember the last time the Steelers actually traded down a few picks in the first round of the draft?
I do, because it's so rare. It was 0-1 with Kevin Colbert moving down three spots and still coming away with Casey Hampton.
Right. They gave up the 16th overall pick that year to the Jets for 19th overall, which ended up being Casey Hampton. They got a fourth round pick as part of that. Feels like they should have got when you look back, does it feel like they should have got a little bit more?
I mean, it's funny. Omar Khan, though, gave up a four to go up three spots in 2023. So it all kind of came full circle. I mean, trade value charts would tell you, I think, actually, you should get more than that. But I think Kevin Colbert was never one that was looking at the trade value chart too heavily.
And then nowadays, too, I mean, it's been, what, 23 years since that happened now? Good God. They got a fourth round pick, 111th overall, Matthias Nguente, and then also a sixth round pick, 181st overall, went on Rodney Bailey that year. But that's the last time that the team actually traded down in the first round there. To me, I mean, is getting a fourth or a sixth out of this that appetizing?
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to move the needle in terms of really, you know, filling a need or having the opportunity to do that. But that's only trading down three spots. What if you traded down 7 or 10 or something a bit more radical? Then you start talking about getting, you know, potential day two compensation there. So here's my question to you. Is there a prospect?
When was the last time it happened before this? Because that was that this long list that I have that I do every 2 years or so on the site was obviously the Kevin Colbert era.
You're asking the first round prior to
2001, which would have been pre-Colbert, because they didn't do it in 2000.
Sure. They took Burris at 8. I have no idea. I wouldn't even know exactly where to begin with that. I mean, Pittsburgh trading down in general, we mentioned this Friday, it happened last year with Colbert or with Khan, because they traded up. They given up their fourth round pick to New England, and they put like a third round pick and then nothing until the sixth or seventh round, I think it was. And so they traded down with Carolina to get back. What was it, a fourth round pick, and still took Darnell Washington. But before that, the last trade down in any draft that Kevin Colbert made, maybe you have the list open, Dave. It was what, like 2010 or 2011, last time he moved down at any point in a draft?
Right, right. I mean, and you know, obviously we're having a conversation about round one, but trading, I mean, he traded down 3 years in a row in 2008, 2009, and 2010. In 2008, he traded a 2008 fourth round pick, which ended up being Brian Kell to the Giants. For 2008 fourth round pick, 130th overall, which was Tony Hills, a 2008 sixth round pick, which ended up being Ryan Monday. So that was 2008. He traded down in the fourth. In 2009, he traded a second round pick, number 64 overall, which ended up being Richard Quinn. A 2009 fourth round pick, which ended up being Seth Olsen. He traded those two picks, those two picks he traded in 2009 to the Broncos for two third round picks, which ended up being Craig Urbick and Mike Wallace. In 2010, he traded down in the fifth round, pick 155, John Skelton to the Cardinals for Bryant McFadden, player, and a 2010 sixth round pick, which he used on some kid named Antonio Brown. Mm-hmm.
And then he stopped after that.
You
got to know when to hold him, know when to fold him. And he said, I hit on that trade, and he never moved down again. Now, Colbert once revealed, at least in the first round, maybe it was applicable to other rounds, I don't know for sure. He would only trade in the first round. You know, if he moved down, let's say three spots, as he did in 2001, there had to be three guys that he would absolutely take at that new position, that later pick, to eliminate any risk of him losing out on his guys before their pick came on. So if you go down three spots, there had to be three guys that you loved and you were convinced and convicted to take at that new position. So that's why he was so rigid and didn't move down in the first round often, because you had to have a perfect scenario of you're not going to move down 10 spots. There's probably not 10 guys that you love to take along the way. And the board kind of has to be perfect for Pittsburgh. And now, does Khan share that philosophy? I don't know.
I would think that this is just me. I mean, how many guys do you have circled in the first round with the hearts and smarts and the we want and need and all like that? Anything more than three down, It's hard to fathom.
Sure, but Colbert's philosophy was a risk aversion. We don't want to get caught with our pants down. We may, you know, you take the risk and say, does this guy we would take at 16 be there at 19? If he is, then we've won both ways. We've gotten our guy and we've gotten a draft pick, but we might not get that guy if somebody else swoops in and takes him. Does Khan share that same kind of, you know, really conservative philosophy? We just don't know.
Right, right. This is another thing where you're pointing to history and all like that, trends and that kind of thing there. So it would be quite a development if they did. Now, look, they obviously have traded for a guy like Minka and traded basically out of the first round completely, you know, but I mean, as far as actually trading down, you know, a spot, two spots, a handful of spots, whatever, and still remaining in the first round, it would be quite a development if they did that. Now, look, it goes back to, should they or could they and all, like, I mean, the answer is always yes, you know, especially this year when, you know, could you go down a couple of spots and still get one of the top, you know, two or three centers that you have? Absolutely. It feels like you could.
Sure. And to answer the question that you had asked a while ago, I cannot find the last time Pittsburgh traded down in round one prior to 2001. I maybe it's happened before, probably has at some point, but probably pretty rare and not easily accessible information.
Right.
What about, and I had an article this morning, Dave, kind of flipping gears. I think you saw, well, you did see, obviously, last year, Omar Khan trade up in the first round. I don't think that's on the table this year. You can't rule anything out, but I think it's probably fair to say that a trade up is much less likely this year than last year in round one. Is that fair?
Yeah, and going by where all the maybe smoke, a little bit of smoke might be as far as something like that, it feels, at least to me up until this point, it feels like if you went up to get anybody, it circles back to that combine report from, who was it, Ian Rappaport about Roma Duze?
About Pittsburgh having that, they're formal with him, right? Yeah, if there was a name, it'd be probably that, or maybe a corner like a Terrion Arnold. But again, I think it's because of the depth at places like receiver and corner and tackle. I think trading up is a lot less likely.
I agree. If they did go up, I would envision it maybe being for a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. But I had the thought of, okay, trade up in round one, unlikely. What about trade up in round two? We've discussed this a little bit, Lord, off and on as well. Again, I know it's all projection, but let's say they don't take a center in round one. I think you got to be aggressive in round two, because that's a situation where, yes, that centers fall, but will they fall all the way to 51? If Frazier falls, quote unquote, to 48, does you no good, he's off the board, and you got to find somebody else. And so I think at that point, you should start becoming pretty aggressive and working the phones.
Yeah, I agree. And it at least feels like it could be Frazier, could be that guy.
Or it could be another position. You talk about receiver. Yes, receiver's deep, but listen, after day one ends, people know where the value's at, and you start to see runs. Let's say a couple receivers who you thought be first-round picks tumble out of the top 32. Inevitably, somebody will. Some position group will be heavier. You're going to see a run on that, and teams will be able to have a chance to have a whole night to evaluate their board, understand there's strength here at receiver. And so depth is strong, but depth can only be so good, and you don't want to be caught, you know, picking the 13th wide receiver, and you may not love that individual guy. Yes, you can say that in general, classes are deep, but maybe you think it's deep and but you don't want that one X receiver for whatever reason, because you just don't like his tape or character, medical, whatever the issue is. And so, you know, when you talk about actual names, you have to actually like the guy and grade that guy highly. So, you know, Ricky Pearsall apparently gaining some buzz might go higher than people think. Pittsburgh showed interest in him. Could that be somebody you trade up for? Not saying you have to, that they absolutely will, a bunch of needs to fill, all that kind of stuff. But I'll put it this way, though. I think a round two trade up is a real possibility and far more likely than trading up in round one.
The only, as far as I will go about the possible trading at all during this draft, I feel comfortable in saying that I'm 89% positive there will be some movement at some point during this draft by Omar Khan.
What do you think is more likely, a move up, move down, somewhere in the draft?
Move up. I think that's his nature, is to be aggressive and go get somebody instead of going back and waiting on somebody. So I would be more apt to predict that somewhere, and it might even happen more than once, you know, but I'm more apt to thinking that we are have an 89% probability of them trading during the draft, and of that, the likelihood of them going up in some round.
Do you think that's more my mindset of a round two type of deal in terms of a trade up?
Sure. Okay. I don't think you can discount that at all.
If you did that, do you feel compelled to then try to trade down again? Because let's say hypothetically you give up a fourth round pick to go up X amount of spots in the second round. You're picking then from 98 and not again until, what, 178, whatever that first six rounder is?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can entertain the thought of trying to go up again at some point. It might cost you something in 2025.
But do you trade down to help fill that gap? Because that's what happened last year. Remember, they traded their fourth round pick to go from 17 to 14, and they were sitting there, I think, third round, and they didn't pick again until either late round six or round seven, I think maybe even round seven, maybe a pair of sevens last year. And then you saw Khan move down with Carolina to get back a fourth round pick. So I think if you trade up in round two, unless you are trading future capital, unless you trade a 2025 selection, which Pittsburgh's already traded, I think some of those with the Fields trade there, then you may have to look to move back down with one of those third round picks to try to get back a fourth round pick to bridge that gap between. Otherwise, it's just a really long wait from that 98 pick to the sixth round selection, assuming, let's say, you give up a fourth round pick.
Here's the thing, too. They probably would like to make seven selections in this draft.
Yeah. I mean, again, given the needs, I mean, how often do they not make? How many did they make last year? Did they make seven last year? Not that they're beholden to anything, and it's not like they have to be at a certain number, but what did they make last year? They made seven last year. And yeah, typically they made
seven a year before that. You go back to 2021 where they had 9 picks in 2021. They obviously only had six in 2020. I'm willing to bet somehow they even after moving up or down or whatever, they still come out with seven picks this year.
I believe aside from 2020, where, of course, they had given up their first round pick for Minka, the last time they had exited a draft without at least seven selections was 2003, I believe, when they traded up for Troy and only picked five players that year. Troy, Alonzo Jackson, Ike Taylor, Ryan St. Pierre, and JT Wall. That was basically once in the last 20 years they've only had fewer than seven selections, had six or less picks in a class. So it is rare. Again, history is just that. New regime, you never know for sure, but that is the history.
All right. I mean, and once again, we entertain questions of this every year, and we had the discussion at some point. To me, it would be surprising if they traded, going back to the original thought, what's the possibility? You don't really know because you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know what's going on behind closed doors and all. But until the next time that it happens of them trading down in the first round, it's easy to say that it's unlikely to happen for them.
Yeah, and the team doesn't even know. I mean, they might have an inkling of what they would like to do, what they're maybe hearing or thinking about, having an idea of the board. But until, guys start falling and picks start getting turned in and offers are being submitted and phone calls are being made, you just don't know. So it is really hard to predict.
All right. If you're a betting person, though, the takeaway from this entire conversation is that the first trade that if indeed this team trades at all during this year's draft, And the probability of them moving up in the second round would be what you circle.
Yes. And I still think trading down in round one is on the table. If they do move somewhere in round one, obviously staying is kind of the default most likely choice for any given team. But if they did move, I would say down in round one. And then in terms of round two, I think moving up is a possibility.
Okay.
All right, Dave, anything else for us to discuss today? Again, pretty light on topics overall. Anything else that's crossed your screen?
I don't think so.
I should say, speaking of just kind of draft oddities, again, history is just history, but I think it's an interesting point. We know that there's just broadly speaking, selecting an offensive lineman is the most likely outcome in the first round. If you had to pick a broad position group, is that fair to say?
Oh yeah. I mean, but even so, we've built that short list over and over again several times. If they it feels like it would be one of three positions that they would go first round in, and I would probably rank them offensive line, corner, and then wide receiver.
That's fair. If they do take an offensive lineman at center or tackle, it would be the first time in Steelers draft history they drafted offensive linemen in the first round in back-to-back years, which I think is pretty notable for a team that's been drafting since the very first NFL draft in 1936. Does that mean a whole lot? No, not really. But I do think it would speak to a level of commitment to building the trenches, a little bit of that Andy Weidel influence of how things was built in Philadelphia. Arthur Smith, you hire him as your OC to really focus on that ground game. So obviously Broderick Jones last year, if they do take a lineman, this should be the first time for any, just offensive lineman, guard, center, tackle, whatever, in back-to-back first rounds.
And we've heard a couple of times recently this offseason about Tomlin and Khan talking about the importance of the trenches, so sure. That would not be surprising at all.
Yeah, and it would be certainly a departure from, say, the 2021 NFL draft, where the focus, rightly or wrongly, was on they take running back in the first round with Najee, tight end Pat Freiermuth in round two, and they don't take their offensive lineman until the third, fourth round. You might be seeing a reversal of that, where it's we're leading with O-line, we're focusing on that before we focus on more of the skill positions.
Agreed.
All right, Dave, anything else? I think kind of a shorter show, probably on tap today. Got some emails we can get to, I'm sure, to close out today's show. But let's see. Tyler Huntley apparently had a chance to sign with the Steelers, according to Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland, Cleveland.com. And that went out the window after Justin Fields was traded for. I was surprised Huntley went to Cleveland. I mean, it's kind of a jumbled up quarterback situation for a guy that backed up Lamar as number two, and I thought played decent football overall. I was surprised he's now maybe the number three in Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm much happier with Fields than I am Huntley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here. So, I mean, if Huntley was going to be the number three in Cleveland, I don't know how he couldn't be the number three in Pittsburgh. I don't know how Fields was 100% going to block that, but that's all, I guess, really kind of besides the point. Anything else here? Let me just kind of check.
Yeah, no contract info yet. I was hoping it would come in this morning on Pruitt, who officially hit the transaction sheet on Friday there. So we'll probably have to wait until tomorrow morning to find out specifics on his one-year deal, which should be a veteran benefit deal. The only question is did he get a signing bonus? And if he did, how much was that signing bonus? Did it reach the max of $167,500? So that's really the only outstanding thing that we're waiting for as far as contracts go.
Okay, gotcha. One other draft-related thing, kind of a fun article I wrote over the weekend. This year's draft is interesting. There's a couple of international prospects. There's the International Pathway Program, which is I think been created by the NFL a couple of years ago to help kind of bridge as the NFL tries to expand, you know, globally with games overseas. But 18 guys that all kind of walks of life from the international program, and some interesting names on this list, including Travis Clayton, who's an offensive lineman from the United Kingdom, has been part of their American Football Academy that's well known and highly regarded over there. They were all at the South Florida Pro Day, and Pittsburgh did have a scout there to watch the South Florida guys, of course, but also these international prospects that put some pretty interesting numbers. So Clayton is 6'7", 301, 35-inch arms, ran, I think, a 4.79 40. And so pretty athletic guy, interesting name overall. One guy that Pittsburgh has actually scouted, I don't think he's part of the International Pathway Program, but it is Giovanni Manu from British Columbia. He's from he's a Tongan native. Moved to Canada when he was 11. He's listed as 6'7", 352, ran a 4.96 40 at 352, which is ridiculous. Played left tackle. So he's actually played a bunch of, you know, professional football. He started playing when he was a teenager. He was a basketball guy growing up. And so that's a guy that Pittsburgh apparently had a scout up there up north in October. And that's a name that actually might get drafted, kind of like Jordan Mailata, although this Mailata did not play football before getting drafted. Manu has played left tackle. So one name to watch potentially late rounds.
Yeah, Mailata just signed a huge deal, didn't he?
Yeah, he signed a giant extension. Did he just sign it, or was that last year? Or he got paid.
Yeah, I thought it was just recently, wasn't it?
You're right. Yeah, April 4th, 2024. Yeah, I couldn't remember if that was last year or this year. So yeah, he just got paid a couple days ago.
All right. I think all we have left is maybe a handful of questions in the mailbag here.
Okay, let's get to some reader emails and close out today's show.
All right, Mark from New Zealand writes in, just wondering why the Steelers seemingly ignore some players, i.e. no formal meetings, little pro day attendance at positions of need that are considered to be top 50 picks and meet the perceived team requirements at their respective positions. Names like Enos Rakestraw and TJ Tampa, Devondre Sweat, Kingsley Sua, how do you pronounce Kingsley's last name? Sua Mataya, okay. And inside linebacker Peyton Wilson are big names that come to mind. Is there just such an abundance of players coming out of college that they can't do their due diligence on all of them? First and foremost, all we know when it comes to, you know, to loosely saying ignore some players, no formal meetings, little pro day attendance. We try to get what we can get at the combine as far as formal meetings. Do we get all of them? No. Little pro day attendance. We try, once again, we try to be as thorough as possible as going through and spotting, you know, starts with obviously Khan and Tomlin, and then position coaches, and then scouts from there. Do we end up having a 100% accurate pro day tracker every year? Sadly, no. Alex is still trying to go through several of these other pro days, at least the more notable school ones, to see, you know, where we don't have anyone listed, to see if he can find anybody there. Now, when you look at some of these names specifically, now this email was written a day ago, on the 7th at 3:06 a.m. my time, I think. You know, we've had the development into Tavondre Sweat getting a DUI, I believe. So, you know, there's a possibility, especially if you read some of the reports and his history and off the field kind of stuff, he might not have even been on their board, you know.
Or at least not, I mean, he was not going to become a Steeler. Just there was no need, positional need and other needs. And based on where he was projected to go, was never really in our purview. I mean, again, as you said, our data is incomplete. I promise they've done their homework on all the names mentioned. It may not always be visible and as loud in public as some other names, which may suggest some level of less interest there. But they had guys at NC State's Pro Day, at Missouri's Pro Day, Iowa State's Pro Day. So I'm pretty sure. So, I mean, the homework is still being done.
Yeah, Mark, I would say is and he put it in his first sentence here, seemingly ignore. I mean, that's maybe what it seems like, but we don't, you know, we don't know how much time they spent with some of these kids during the season and going right. And scouting, you know, some of these games specifically and all like that. Now, I will say this, and I'll continue to say this every year. When it comes to the Steelers, it feels like the draft board is like a 50 name index card. You know,
you feel it'll be the same under Khan. It felt that way last year.
It did feel that way.
It feels just 1 year.
It feels like it's that way this year. It feels like, and we do this exercise every year. We haven't had that contest, right? Where you name 50 players and try to predict, you know, if we've got a few listeners and readers over the years that really do a good job and put these together. Now, are you going to hit all the draft picks? I don't know. It feels like maybe over the years we've had some, you know, probably not get the rounds right, but I dare say that every year that you know, between me, you, and our contributors or anybody listening that participates in that exercise, you know, to build out a list of 50 names based off of formals and pro days and pre-draft visits and all like that, you should be able to get 5 or 6, you know, in other words, most of the actual selections within that group of 50. And if we can do that, you know, as outsiders, it makes you feel like, now look, technically, is there a draft board bigger than that? Yeah, I'm sure it is, but it does feel like this, you know, tongue in cheek that annually and for some time now that theoretically their draft board's got 50 names on it.
Yeah, I mean, again, they have a type, whether that's, you know, the measurables, there's typically some of those thresholds that I think have become more obvious, and some transitions there, talk about some of the longer, bigger cornerbacks, the Hearts and Smarts. Again, they have not, who was the last quote-unquote character red flag player they've drafted? I mean, they really have not pursued those types of guys for Martavis Bryant, Mike Adams, you know, and they weren't like super uber character concerns coming out where they had a bunch of legal stuff. It was, you know, marijuana type stuff, which obviously, you know, got Bryant out of the league and all that kind of stuff. But point being is that they are truly like squeaky clean, pedigree, productive, measurable, athletic. Like they very much have a type when it comes to their prospects, even just generally speaking.
All right. Nick from Richmond writes in, thanks for all you do with the site. Best coverage out there. I was looking at Spencer Anderson's profile you released after the pick last year, and it highlights. And look, he makes a good point there. You know, as many draft profiles, we got even more of them, I think, this year, right, than we did last year. The goal is for us to, A, you know, put enough, you know, we want to learn. We each individually cannot learn about 200 and something players. We try our best to dig in individually as most, but a lot of times we're reliant on a group effort here of trying to put out as many profiles as possible, so we at least learn a little bit about as many players as possible. But last year we did not have a profile on Spencer Anderson, did we?
No, not until after the pick. Yeah, our goal is to have one for every single draft pick, but you know, you get in the late rounds, they can go any different direction. So we did. That was the one guy we did not have a report on when the pick was officially made.
Right. Now, was he on the index card of 50 or supposed on the Steelers draft? Well, we don't know. I mean, we just like to have fun with talking about that 50 player draft card there. But I mean, it's not perfect. You know, and it's never going to be perfect on our end here. He goes, and I just interjected that because he brought up the name Spencer Anderson here. He says, you released after the pick last year, and it highlights a potential for center to be his best position. Any thoughts of him there? He says, I don't remember him getting many snaps in camp last year. Yeah, look, Nick, that's a guy that after the pick was made, you know, we talked quite a bit about his position flexibility, whether or not he gets some work at center in camp in the preseason, what limited he got in training camp was just that. Did he even play any center in the preseason, Alex?
I'm trying to look it up. He had to have, though, because Herbig had gotten hurt. He only played in the first preseason game. I know McCollum was there, but I mean, Kendrick Green got a bunch of snaps too. I'm gonna try to find it here as we talk about it. If I can pull up preseason charting,
if he did, it wasn't much, but we made such a big deal of that. It's shame on us for not remembering it overall. I can look here real quick on some stuff.
Okay, yeah, I'm just trying to search back to our preseason chart. He had gotten work there in camp. I mean, he played everywhere. I think everything, but maybe not left tackle.
He played five snaps at center in the second preseason game.
Okay, what about the third?
No, he played 31 at left guard, 10 at right tackle. He played 41 in total. And in the first preseason game, he played 37 snaps, 17 at left guard, 13 at right guard, and 7 at right tackle. In the second preseason game, as I mentioned, he played 31 total snaps. He played 5 at center, 6 at left guard, 12. Remember, that was the game we said he almost we were hoping that he might get some snaps at left tackle so he could run the gauntlet there. He played 4 or 5 positions in that game, did not play any left tackle. And then the third preseason game, he played 41 snaps, 31 at left guard, 10 at right tackle. It doesn't feel, I mean, is it plausible that they take another look at him, you know, maybe some center stuff at some point during camp in the preseason? Yeah, that's plausible. But I mean, is he really a legitimate center candidate as we sit here right now? It doesn't feel like it.
Yeah, it's a good point. Kind of reviewing what he did last year would indicate that. I wonder what they view his best position being. Is it still going to be at tackle? Is it going to be at guard? I mean, I think in terms of the internal guys, they've spoken about Nate Herbig the most as a potential center option. And there is Ryan McCollum, who's been a practice squatter, played 100 snaps at center, I think back in 21 with Detroit. But in terms of internal names, their top option at center right now is Nate Herbig.
I would agree there. So,
where do you think Anderson's best fit is, though? Because I thought maybe he would kick inside the play center.
Trying to go back to last year,
it felt
like one of the guard positions, like a left guard position.
Yeah, in my camp notes, I mentioned that it felt like he had logged more time at tackle than guard during the summer, just based on an eye test alone. He opened up camp as a third string right tackle. But yeah, I think maybe guard will be his home.
It feels like left guard. They gave him the longest look at left guard last year during the preseason. And then next it was split between right guard and right tackle. So they probably don't even know yet, you know, but I mean, it based on the tape, college tape and all like that, it felt like guard was going to kind of be his best position, one of the two guard spots.
I mean, I think the thing about him is what they like is he can play all these spots. And so right. It's less about maybe putting him into one spot as it is. We just like he can play basically anything up and down the offensive line.
And he's not guaranteed to make the roster, probably.
No, yeah, I wouldn't say he's guaranteed, but the versatility will certainly help as you're trying to figure out that eighth, ninth offensive lineman.
Okay, let's see here. What else do we have? Maybe we can get to Cray. Let's see. Joe. It's clear from no, I think we already hit that about Alt and all. So I think we've got most of the questions answered here overall that we had. So with that, we'll make it a little bit shorter show this week and we'll sit here and wait for the any word on the pre-draft visitors today.
Let me check Dale Lawley. He typically is the one who tweets them out for the team. It'll probably happen 8 seconds after the podcast ends because that always happens. Yeah, I'm not seeing anything there, but there should be more than just Melton. And you, like you said, it's usually 3 to 4 names. Stevens may be part of that group and then maybe somebody else. I don't know. Are there any report? I guess, yeah, there's Penix. And do we even know that Dayton Mims was going to come in?
Well, what about the Washington running back as well, too? Dylan Johnson. What there was a question about, you know, wasn't it reported that he's going to, but we didn't have a date on Dylan Johnson out of Washington.
Yeah, there's still some guys on our tracker that we never found out either when they came in or a future date of when they would come in. I'll kind of look at the list here. Yeah, Penix was sometime in April. Johnson was date unknown. Mims, we never found out an exact date of whether that's happened or will happen.
Fisk.
Yeah, let me edit that article there because we know on the date on him. Boyd, I don't know if we knew the Boyd one.
And we know the Andrew Phillips date needs to be updated as well, too.
Yeah, so I'll go in and update that. So there's a couple outstanding, but hopefully we learn some new names as well.
Yeah, the hope is at the end of this week, we have 30.
Right.
That way there's no question about who was and wasn't brought in, but we don't live in a perfect world. All right, Alex, we'll get after it on Wednesday. Who knows what we might be talking about come then. Obviously, a lot more draft talk as we get closer to the actual that event actually happening there. So until Wednesday, you can follow me on Twitter/X at Steeders Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button, upper right navigational bar. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com, hit the ad-free button. Follow the directions that way to get a username and a password to get an ad-free version of the site. So until Wednesday, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.